for the most entertaining talk anywhere. Stay tuned to LA Talk Radio, your real talk station. Your real 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
Who's this?
My name is Kim.
Okay. How old are you, Kim?
25.
All right. And where are you calling from?
Wayzata.
All right, cool. This is He Loves Me, He Loves Me Not. I don't know if you heard this a few weeks ago.
Yes, I did.
Do you have a boyfriend or a husband?
I have a boyfriend.
All right. How long have you been going out with him?
Just about a year now.
Oh, okay. And you suppose he loves you?
I know he loves me.
Oh, really? Why? How do you know?
Oh, special little love notes or sending me flowers or just the special time that we're able to spend together.
All right. What's your boyfriend's name?
Greg.
And where does he live?
Duluth.
Oh, long distance.
Yeah.
Well, how often do you see him?
We typically see each other every weekend.
Oh.
Because he's in Duluth and I'm in Wayzata, it makes it a little hard to see each other during the week.
Okay. And
it's our quality time.
So you have absolutely no reason to suspect he might be messing around on you?
No, none.
Well, then this is going to be boring. But we'll humor you, okay?
Okay.
We'll give him a call and see what happens. Please don't say anything, okay, Kim?
Okay.
I'll do all the talking.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, is Greg there?
Yeah, this is.
Greg, how you doing? My name is Andy Savage. I'm calling from The Edge Radio in Minneapolis, St. Paul. How are things in Duluth?
A little frigid.
Yeah.
What can I do for you?
Well, I guess, I don't know, do you get to Minneapolis or St. Paul often or what?
Yeah, every weekend I'm down on business.
Yeah, because we pulled your business card out of a fishbowl at a local merchant, and every month we give away a dozen roses to anybody. And, well, you're the winner this month. Congratulations. The deal is, you don't have to do anything. I know you're far away. We deliver the roses for you, and we'll even put whatever you want on a nice little card to go along with the roses. All we need from you is a name and an address of somebody you want them delivered to.
Okay, yeah, my wife, Cindy.
What?
Okay.
Who's?
Cindy?
Oh, Jesus.
Your wife,
Christ.
Cindy? Your wife, Cindy? Would you...
Yeah.
Wait.
Greg, Kim's on the line.
Hi, Kim.
Oh, hi, Greg. Would you mind explaining this to me? Your wife, Cindy, how long have you been married?
I was kidding.
Kidding my ass. You're such a dick.
You son of a...
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Fox 2000 Pictures presents Anne Hathaway, Kate Hudson, and Candace Bergen in a movie no self-respecting man would go see during the best weekend of the NFL season. Bride Wars, the story of two women who cares? The playoffs are on. Have fun, honey, and pick me up some beer on the way home.
Phil's Party reminds an area man why he doesn't go to Phil's parties. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Josh Nelson had all but forgotten why he carefully avoided parties given by co-worker Phil Gladstein. But last night, Nelson suddenly remembered the reason after just a few minutes at Phil's latest gathering. Said Nelson,
I gotta get out of here. I just cannot listen to another boating story tonight. And there's Celine Dion on the stereo, for God's sake.
Several hours later, Nelson vowed never to return again as he led a rumble line out of Phil's apartment after setting the place on fire. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. eBay Captain of Industry.
Mr. eBay Captain of Industry.
Whether it's Grandma's prosthetic leg, a G.I. Joe with Kung Fu grip, or a water pump from a 79 Gremlin, you smell money where others smell garbage.
One man's trash is another man's auction.
Armed only with a digital camera, a PC, and a detailed knowledge of Yu-Gi-Oh cards, you, Mr. eBay Captain of Industry, have created an empire.
The Donald Trump of cyberspace.
Your reserve is always low.
And you package carefully, yeah.
So the next time you purchase a set of vintage clown figures or a Mama's Family Betamax box set, be sure to use PayPal and give positive feedback to Mr. eBay, Captain of Industry, a real American hero.
Mr. eBay, Captain of Industry.
You made how much off that autographed Kevin Federline hat?
Damn!
From high atop the LA Talk Radio building, it's time for Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Sam and Susie in the Morning.
Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. It's Friday, January 9th. Welcome to the show. And, we do have TJ in here.
Yeah, of course
yes.
you do.
Yes, good morning,
Absolutely.
TJ.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. You've really been there for me. I really appreciate you coming
you're welcome.
In and everything.
You're welcome. Don't forget it.
I will never forget it.
Of course. No, I'm happy to be here. It's fun. I love talking. It's what I do. It's all I got, Sam, is talking.
Yeah.
I can't do
and
anything
do
with my hands.
Well.
Thank you. You're goddamn right. I can't do anything with my hands. I can't construct anything. I have no math skills. I can't add. I got nothing.
So I can't ask you to do some plumbing in my house.
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. I throw money at everything.
Yeah. That's a good way to do it. You know, I tend to do the same thing.
Yeah. That's why I don't want to ever really get too good at anything because I don't have to do it myself.
Yeah.
You know?
You're right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
You're fucking smart.
Goddamn right. I'm smart, too. I'm smart and I got a mouth. So
you
there you go.
You
but, so I'm happy to be here. I'm very happy to be here. I'm always happy to talk.
Yeah. Do you think this has to do with the fact that you did mention something on your show, how you like to be like the center of attention in a party or something like that?
Yes.
So this talking probably has something to do with that.
Oh, it has everything to do with it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But but then again, the sad thing is that that's where I'm kind of insane, is the fact that I want to be the center of attention, but I don't want anybody to look at me.
Really?
I want everybody to know me, but I don't want anybody to talk to me.
That is really complicated.
I'm a paradox. I really am. I can't stand being alone, but I hate being around people.
Really? And what about being a stand-up? I mean, people look at you all the time.
That's the other part of the weirdness, man.
Wow.
I love to stand in front of 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people. I hosted Woodstock 99. I hosted the 30th anniversary of Woodstock in 1999. And there was 250,000 people.
And you hosted the
quarter
thing?
Million people. It was
really?
Me and like well they rotated me and three other guys.
That's cool.
And I introduced who did I introduce when I was there? Let's see, I introduced Kid Rock. I introduced Elvis Costello. Mm-hmm. I introduced. I was hanging out with Elvis Costello backstage and Robbie Krieger from the Doors, and I was hanging out with the Brian Setzer Orchestra.
Mm.
I was hanging out with a bunch of them. Yeah,
nice.
Metallica.
Where did it take place? In
Woodstock.
Woodstock.
In at an air base. Upstate New York, up in the middle, right smack in the middle of the state, actually. I had done the Montreal Comedy Festival the week before, and I drove down from Montreal to Woodstock. It was pretty interesting. But it was on a decommissioned Air Force base.
Oh.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. And a 250,000. This is the one where they had all the fires and all that stuff.
Yes.
I had never ever it was pretty wild. And I got a big laugh too. I almost turned it down. This I've talked about this a few times. I was an awful client.
Yeah.
I was a terrible, terrible client. I was telling you the other day I was with ICM, this big agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I told you, I remember that's right, we were talking the other day when I said, I've blown a lot of my opportunities in my career.
Right, right.
And
do you think you have some sense of self-destruction inside?
Used
you?
To.
Really?
I used to.
Oh.
So I
can give you some of mine if you want.
You know? Oh, no. I've had it. Oh, yeah. Thank you. I'm all full up. Thank you. I got a bunch in a closet at home. I got plenty of self-destruction left.
Yeah, it's easy to self-destruct.
Yeah. But dig this. So my agent. So the agent calls me. I had several agents at this agency. I mean, I had one for this, one for that, one for that. So the personal appearance agent calls me, and he says. How would you like to host Woodstock?
Mm.
And I said, I can't do that.
Really?
I really can't. And he goes, he says, we're talking about a worldwide satellite coverage, and
It's probably the biggest concert
right.
ever.
And everything he told me that was amazing about the gig was another reason for me to not do it.
Really?
Because I was afraid I'd fuck it up. I was afraid. Yeah. And so I said,
it's
I don't know.
It's pretty intimidating to be in front of so many
people.
Well,
but see, that wasn't the issue. That wasn't so much just the sheer number. I mean, look, if you're doing 1,000, you might as well do 300,000.
I see.
You know, it's just
right.
a big fucking number. Yeah. That's all. Matter of fact, the more the better, you know. Anyway, so I tell him I don't know. So finally, I get off the phone. My manager calls me later. He goes, "Are you fucking insane? Are you seriously telling me that you're not gonna?" It got to the point where my manager was mad at me all the time because I was such a fucking nut. And so we're on now on a conference call, and my manager and my agent are trying to convince me. There's 8 billion comics. Mm-hmm. Sadly, there's a lot of comics out there. Any one of them would have given their right nut just to have an agent and a manager, let alone an agent and a manager saying, you got to do Woodstock. So I said, I'm yelling.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not going to set the record for the world's largest boo. I am not going to go and do my act for 250,000 friggin' stoner hit. And he goes, you're not doing your act. You're not going there to do stand-up. You're not part of the show. You are the MC. You're hosting the event. You're one of the MCs. You're going to MC the event. You're going to host it. You're going to introduce people. You're going to make announcements.
Right.
And I said, oh. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, great. Okay, yeah, cool. Okay, that I can
then
do.
Then they'll do it.
That
yeah,
I can do
okay.
It. And I did it, and I ended up getting huge laughs. Mm. I ended up getting really, you know, because there was all these, you know, they had just like the original Woodstock, don't do the brown acid, right? Well, we had to make announcements like that, and we had to make, you know, no drugs announcements. We had to make, so then finally there was this big pen, looked like a petting zoo, and it's where all the lost kids were. Mm. Okay, there's all these kids in this big like a big pen. And so they gave me the list of this. They gave me these list of names of children who were in the holding area.
Really?
And I said, and so right before they gave me the list, I got all these girls to take their tops off because I said, it's not enough tits here. It's not enough tops off. So,
nice.
I'm going up and then I'm getting this girl, this girl, this girl. So I had like 100 girls their tops off in the first two rows.
Nice.
It was like a bunch of Susies. And it wasn't that easy. But they were fine. Anyway, so then I said, okay. I said, now, will the following people please go pick up your children? And it was like 30 kids. And I said, Jesus Christ. It's like 30 fucking kids in his list. You fucking drunk, stone friggin' losers. You goddamn deadheads. Go pick up your fucking children. Take them to a fucking rock concert.
Yeah, why would they take them in the first place?
The laughs were huge. And I said, actually, you know what? Will you broads with your tits out? Would you please go breastfeed the kids who are big, huge fucking
good,
laugh.
Good.
Big, huge fucking laugh. See, that's the kind of stuff I deserve respect for.
Yeah, you definitely
that's the kind
do.
Of stuff I deserve.
I don't give you enough respect, I suppose.
Not you. No, I'm talking about in this town. Not you.
Yeah.
God, no,
no
you
no,
give
no,
me
I
all
know.
The. You're like one of the. You're like you're somebody I wish I had in my in my corner back when things are going good because you nothing but
thank
believe
you.
In me.
Thank you. But today, I mean, this week has been. Pretty hellacious for me, you know. I mean,
yeah. Why? What's
I don't
going
know.
On?
I'm like getting into this funk, you know. Does it happen to you sometimes? You know,
all the
like,
time. Twice
really?
A day, I get into a funk.
Really,
I'm in a constant battle with the funk, Sammy.
Really,
constant battle with.
Yeah,
the funk.
I. You know, I used to be, and then it hasn't come around, hasn't reared its head in the past year, and then suddenly it's like, you know, you start thinking everything negative,
right?
You know, and
yeah.
then I'm thinking to myself, I don't have to, you know, because tomorrow or the next day is going to be different.
Yeah,
you know, and you got to keep that in mind, you know. I mean, even when everything seems like so shitty, you know, you think about it and you go, well, that's not the end of the world, you know. I mean,
right,
you know, it's happened before,
right,
and it's just some days are bad, you
know? And God's not going to give you anything more than you can handle.
Yeah,
and what you know what doesn't kill us makes us stronger.
I suppose so. Yeah,
you know?
But I think I think I've matured in the way that I'm recognizing it now, you know.
That's what it's all about. And it's just recognizing it.
Yeah,
that's it,
and dealing with it.
That's all. And, you know, and dealing with it, all dealing with it means to me is you know, you just got to breathe a little bit, got to distract yourself. And, you know, you can't like, think positive. That's, you know, whatever.
No.
You got to
maybe act as if, you
know. You have to act as if. And at the same time, you also have to just realize what is not. The biggest thing is, you know, what we have no control over.
Mm.
That's the biggest thing for me. I got no, you know, a lot of times what's getting me in a funk is stuff that I have no control over.
Yeah.
And once I'm able to embrace that, you know, and rationalize all that, then it starts to be a little bit easier.
But first you go through a feeling of helplessness and shit, you know, it's like, you know, and then it's sort of like you look at it differently,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you feel that you can't control something mm-hmm. and you like to control things,
oh, yeah.
then it makes you depressed.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, did you hear any part of my show yesterday? I know you're busy. I don't mean to put you on the spot.
You know I usually
do. You listen all the time.
Yeah.
But yesterday I was talking to my brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard the beginning. Go ahead.
And he, you know, and, you know, one of his close friends killed himself.
Yes, I heard that.
Just before Christmas.
Wow. Can you imagine, TJ? Somebody you know so well.
And, you know, and we didn't get into it in the details on his call, but I'll tell you. You know how this fucking guy did it?
Mm.
This fucking guy. First of all, I'll leave the details about my brother-in-law out of it, but the guy had reached out to the guy's wife had reached out to my brother-in-law and said, could you talk to him? And it wasn't a big deal because they were in touch all the time. They were really good friends. They were very close.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the last time my brother-in-law talked to him was about 4 hours.
Really?
He was talking to him at whatever in the afternoon. By 7 o'clock, the guy was dead.
Really?
Fucking guy. There's in New York, there's a throughway. Not the New York State Thruway, but another major highway. And there's like there's a truck stop there. Guy went to the truck stop at about 7 at night and threw himself in front of a truck.
Wow.
Now, that's a fucked up way to go.
Wow.
That's a fucked up way
to go.
It sure
is quick, though.
But you know what, though? But here's the thing, and this didn't even dawn on me. This did not dawn on me.
Yeah.
The thing is, that's not a guaranteed death.
No?
That's the fucking thing. It's like, you know, you fucking jump off a building. That's one thing. You know, you take a sleep, you know, some of those, you jump off a bridge. Nine at it, you know, you put a gun in your mouth. You're going to die.
Yeah.
You throw in front of
but
a
bus.
But
I don't know. I mean, if it goes pretty fast.
But, you know, but yeah, but the chances are you're going to end up just awfully horribly maimed or paralyzed. Or
well,
fucking,
that could happen with any suicide attempt.
Yeah,
I mean,
but,
you can
know,
shoot yourself and still not die.
Well,
you know?
Sure, but it's I'm saying the before. Odds. I mean, is it the way it struck some people when I told them? They were like, God, you're not even guaranteed. That didn't even dawn on me. But yeah, what a fucking way to go. What a thing. And you know, and that's what I was talking to him about yesterday was I said, you know, what kind of desperation? Because so many people, there are so many people that want, yeah, actually, we were talking with Chris also, right. Our guest yesterday. There are so many people that want to kill themselves that think about it. And the percentage that ever even attempt it is so small because it's such a nervy thing to do. It takes a lot of courage to want to. And to be suffering to the point of such excruciating agony that you don't that you actually do it is one thing. And when that method is jumping in front of a truck. It's like to
but you
actually,
gotta remember though the state of mind when you're about to
I'm
kill
saying.
Yourself. You're not gonna be very rational on how you're
right.
gonna do it.
Right.
You just
yeah.
fucking you know the first thing that comes
yeah.
to mind. I suppose.
Yeah. Can you know? Imagine?
But it's I mean I believe people go through that much pain
mm-hmm.
that they have to do it. You know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, so like I said, you can't think straight and. You know, because when you think about it,
yeah.
you're really hurting a lot of people by doing that. It's a very selfish act.
It's a very selfish act. It's why it's at, is it a sin in Judaism?
Especially if you leave a lot of mess behind you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's the thing too. They still the truck driver. They still don't think the truck driver ever even knew.
Yeah,
the guy just kept on going, and like he had a big fucking truck. It's at night. It's dark.
Yeah,
had no fucking clue.
Wow.
I don't even know if the word. Yeah.
How did they know he killed himself? And it wasn't. I mean, he wouldn't
because where he was at the truck stop. It was away from. You know,
really?
Yeah, he killed himself.
Wow.
But what the is suicide a sin in Judaism?
Yes.
It is. Okay.
Yes. In fact, they say that if you commit suicide, you have to be buried outside the cemetery.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's
yes.
a harsh. Wow.
That, yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I agree.
They don't look at it.
I agree.
Highly, you know?
I think it's awfully selfish. I think it's a terrible thing to do to your family. This guy had three kids.
And it's murder, even though it's self murder.
Oh, it's murder.
It's murder.
It's murder. Oh, it's a cardinal sin. It's a mortal sin in Catholicism.
Right.
For sure. And this guy had three boys. The oldest was six.
Oh my God.
Oldest boy was six
really?
Years old. Had two others younger than six.
Yeah.
Boom. That's fucked up. I mean, look, you pray for the guy, you pray, you know, it's just like the Travolta thing. It's like, you know, you want to jump on the Scientology thing. My instinct was to jump on Scientology and go, these nuts, and whatever. And then I had to pull back and go, you know, regardless of all that, there's a dead kid and a grieving family. And, you know, and so my instinct right away was to get angry at my brother-in-law's buddy, but, you know, you got to pull back a little bit. But now I'm kind of back to being, my brother-in-law's been having real moments of being pissed at the guy.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But, you know, I can understand that. But, again, I don't think we can judge anyone, you know?
Can't judge.
Just imagine if you're, like, in a very desperate place, you know? Because I think things like mental illness and stuff, you know, which is usually what's behind suicide, mm-hmm. you know, bipolar or depressed or whatever.
Right.
You don't have to be crazy, but just, you know, depressed enough mm-hmm. to feel that there's nobody there that's going to help you. There's right. no hope. There's no nothing. I mean, just think about it. It's your brain, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if your brain tells you that there's no hope, that's mm-hmm. all you know.
That's all you know.
You know? It's like putting on some dark glasses, you know?
Yeah.
And that's all you see is the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, you know, it's hard for me to... I mean, you have to really feel bad for a person like this, because if you get to that point mm-hmm. where you lose any hope,
right.
it's sad.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really sad.
No, I agree. It's pathetic. It really yeah. is. It's,
so, you know, so, I mean, when you like that, how can you possibly think of other people... you know, perhaps you're just screaming for attention that you're not getting, and that's what you're doing. So you're not thinking you're going to hurt people, you know. Yeah. But I think it's the most horrible thing.
It's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing to do. Yeah. Terrible thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you
anyway,
do?
So to some more uppity.
Yeah, this ain't topics. Tits. This ain't is Susie calling in, by the way.
No. Well, my question is this: for those who wonder where Susie is,
yeah.
I don't know. You tell me, because I have no idea where she is.
Australia. She's in Cairns.
Right.
Cairns.
Right. But specifically,
Cairns, Australia. Cairns, C-A-I-R-N-S, I believe is where she was going.
Cairns. Cairns. Okay. I don't know. Maybe you saw that on Facebook. Or
yeah, I saw it on
right?
Facebook. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been getting these photo updates, and you know, and I'm seeing these. She's making out with this guy, that guy,
that guy. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what she wanted to do, you know.
Well, she's doing it.
Yeah, but she said she was going to call into the
spirit.
Show.
Yeah,
and I knew she wouldn't, because DJ, you go on a fucking trip across the world.
Right.
The last thing you're going to think about is get up at 3:30 in the morning right. to do a fucking radio show.
Right. Yeah.
When you're not even in the studio.
I don't know.
You know.
I don't know.
So, but anyway, she's got still about, I don't know, according to my calculations, 7 months still. No, I'm kidding.
And now you're taking a hiatus next week. You're going to go into hibernation?
Not quite hibernation.
No.
Not quite hibernation. But we'll sit, rethink the show a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. take some time, make improvements and stuff.
Well, you got a
stuff,
lot
you know?
Of work to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I think that's where your funk is coming from.
I think so.
No, you're complaining
so.
A little bit, but that's
I'm just too
okay.
tired. Yeah.
That's okay. You're complaining
a little bit. Let me fucking complain.
Yeah, you're allowed to. I'm saying you're allowed.
I complain about everything. Forget about it, you know? I mean, whether it's my kids or my wife, you know, it's like, I don't know what it is. I never, in 48 years, noticed this about myself. Okay? And yet my family does. They say, every time you sit down to eat, you complain about something. The food is not hot. The food is not cold. This doesn't go with that. This doesn't go with this. I'm terrible. If the food's not perfect, man, I'm fucking terrible.
Now, where do you think that comes from? Is that your father?
My parents, probably.
Yeah,
I think they're both complainers.
Your mother, are both your parents still alive?
Oh yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah, thank God. And and are they both. Is your mother a bit of a yenta?
Yeah. No, actually, not really.
Not
no.
too bad.
No, she's not a yenta.
She knows Dina.
Not too much gossip and shit going on.
She knows
on
Dina.
There. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
They
love
good?
Her to death.
Good. Oh, she's. Yeah. Adorable.
Yeah, thank you.
Adorable. She's adorable.
But don't we pick up everything from our parents, for crying out loud?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's how we get fucked
I am
up,
my mother.
Know?
I am my mother.
Really?
I am absolutely 100% my mother, and there's a lot of my father in me. There's a lot. I mean, I boil, and I see. So that's the thing is, I'll be in the middle of doing something, I go, holy shit, I am my father.
Yeah.
And my wife goes, I know. I am my mother. My mother, I'm my mother in the sense that my low tolerance for annoying people.
Yeah.
You know, I can't just, like, if something's annoying me on TV, I can't just change the channel. I have to change the channel and go, whoever would watch this? You know what I mean? I got to pass judgment on everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's all our parents. Do your parents ever come to the States to visit?
Oh yeah.
When's the next time they're coming?
Actually, they haven't come for several years though.
Oh, okay.
Because they can't stand the flight. You know, it's like too
much.
That's
a bitch. Oh God, coming all the way to L.A.
from
Tel Aviv. Oh my God.
Yeah. That's a long fucking flight.
God.
My sister-in-law arrived yesterday. 17 hours. That's on a direct flight. So imagine when you have a stopover, you're looking at 24 hours
nonstop.
Yeah,
they got hours. So they're able to get here from Tel Aviv nonstop.
Yes.
Do they fly east or west? Do they fly Over England,
or over
they
Europe,
fly?
Yes.
They fly Europe. Via Europe.
Yeah, okay. It's closer that way.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah, because they're not exactly smack in the middle.
Yeah, and plus, remember when airplanes fly, they don't fly, necessarily vertically or horizontally.
Right.
Sometimes they'll go on top towards the north,
yep.
where the globe is smaller.
Oh yeah. Well, every time you go to, every time we go to England, I know we fly over like Iceland.
Yes.
You know, over Iceland. And
now
Greenland.
I was going to ask you. I think I asked one of our authors this, but. What continent does Iceland belong to?
It's its own continent.
But it's not counted as one.
Right?
We have seven continents.
Oh, wait. The seven continents are North America, South America, Europe, Asia,
Africa,
Australia, and
Antarctica.
And Antarctica. Right. That's the thing. They're just considered islands.
Mm. And it's not part of a continent.
No, it's not part of a continent. It's just considered an island.
Wow. Can you imagine living there? I mean, you're totally isolated from the world.
You know what? I've heard it's a real nice way of life.
Yeah, I heard.
Iceland is actually, like, Reykjavik is actually supposed to be a gorgeous place.
Really?
And it's, like, really clean and, like, you know, generally content people.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of drinking. I think it's a lot of.
Do they speak English?
They speak quietly.
Yeah.
No, they speak. I think. Well, everywhere speaks English now.
Yeah.
But I think it's Icelandic. I think it's a different. It's got to be a Norse type.
Yeah,
of,
probably.
You know, Scandinavian sound and something or other. But there's a lot of drinking there.
I'm sure.
Like when I was in Alaska, it's amazing. It really is amazing. You go to these places where, you know, that whole darkness thing.
Right,
you know,
and really cold and icy.
Really cold. And
they like drinking there, huh? Just
they
like Russia.
They drink. I mean, Alaska, like you go Juneau, you know, there are certain parts of Alaska that just simply after a certain date, you know, are just snowbound.
Yeah.
They're snowed in. And there really are remote. You know, there are some of these places I've been to that are, they will shut down and they do all their business between like, you know, April and October, you know, and that's like it. I mean, maybe April and October.
And that's
when they get all their tourist stuff in and make all their money. And then they just basically bunker down. They have the internet, they have satellite, and like, that's about it.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of drinking, a lot of fucking, and
because it's dark for in the winter. It's dark there for
awfully
a long time.
Awfully cold. It's awfully cold, awfully dark, and there's just not much to do. They're isolated, and they don't realize they're not driving. They're drinking.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Yeah, even parts of North America, even parts of there are certain parts like South Dakota, North Dakota. I've been in parts of North Dakota where it's just so much drinking because it's just and also the Native American population.
Yeah.
That's the other thing too in Alaska that really drives that drinking stuff. Is the Native Americans and Eskimos. They just can't. They're bad. The booze gets them bad.
Yeah.
High alcoholism rate amongst Native Americans.
Cool. Well, we're going to call our author in a few minutes. We have an author that wrote a book called Shyness. Are you shy?
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, okay. You're too shy.
I
just wanted to play this for you.
Cool. Can I go to the bathroom?
We were talking about becoming our father and stuff.
Oh, yes.
You want to go to the bathroom?
Oh, I don't know. You're going to play a
fucking
I didn't know
you're
going to play a song for me.
No, I'm not going to play. Well, okay. I'll play something for you to go to the bathroom. But I want you to hear this one.
What is it?
This station presents Real American
one.
Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Guy who's turning into his father. When you were a kid, you swore you'd never turn out like your old man. But now that you have kids, it turns out you swear just like your old man.
You lousy kids, clean up this.
Sure, you want your kids to think you're hip and happening, but still find yourself screaming, "Turn down that awful jungle music for crying out loud!"
And you don't care how you dress.
You've had that members-only jacket for 25 years.
Even the Goodwill doesn't want it.
So the next time you find yourself saying, "Back in the good old days," or "This must be the new man," look in the mirror, ignore your nose hair, and say hello to Mr. Guy who's turning into his father, a real American hero.
Mr. Guy is turning into his father.
Come here, boy. Pull my finger.
Ah, very funny.
Good, huh?
That's awesome.
If you really want to go to the bathroom,
I
put on
a
quick song.
Because
ran
in.
All right. So stay with us. We're going to have the author coming up. We also have an in-studio guest we expect around 10 o'clock. So that should be a little exciting. And so we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
This winter, there's something outside that's chillingly dangerous. Your teeth will chatter. Your car won't start. And you're frozen stiff. Cold from frozen films. When the weather outside is frightful, it won't be delightful. Cold, now causing shrinkage outside a theater near you.
On your computer, on your Wi-Fi radio, on your iPhone. Commercial-free original talk. Only on LA Talk Radio. Your favorite talk station. Favorite talk station.
There's something about the way you try to look. It's getting right to me, deeper than it really should. What are you, an angel, or just looking that good? When you take your time, you are so divine. I'm not surprised, I'd like to watch you in this life.
Joining us, and we're going to call the author of a book called Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness. And that sounds pretty interesting. Whoops. We better stop the music. Yes, good morning to you. I'm sorry. Mr. Christopher Lane?
Speaking.
Yes, hi. This is Sam and TJ calling you from Los Angeles. How are you doing this morning?
How are you doing?
Good, good. Where are we catching you this moment?
I'm in Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. TJ, you like Chicago, don't you?
I love Chicago. It's better than L.A.
Yeah. That's what they all say, you know.
It's pretty snowy here right now.
Oh, it is?
Several inches. But it's very beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, and they just indicted the governor today. They just impeached him.
Just about time.
Yeah. Oh yeah, only in Illinois could it take 2 months to impeach a
governor. Well, exactly.
The interesting thing.
I'm a little ashamed of the state for that reason.
It's okay. Yeah, you're in Chicago. Get used to it.
Yeah. At any rate, let's talk about your book a little bit. Your book is called Shyness: How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness. Now, this is very interesting. So you're saying that shyness is not about having some mental illness or personality problem. It's probably something that's normal. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, shyness is an endearing personality trait, and basically half your listeners will think of themselves in that way. What happened was that in 1980, the American Psychiatric Association decided that shyness was an illness. What it did was list social anxiety as a new mental disorder that year. And I want to give your listeners a sense of the symptoms that they included in their diagnostic manual. Fear of eating alone in a restaurant, concern about hand trembling as you're writing a check, and avoidance of public restrooms, if you can believe it.
Wow, so they consider this an illness.
They did. These were official symptoms, and what they did 7 years later when they updated this reference manual was lower the bar even further, if that's possible. I want to just quote this one sentence. One of the symptoms was anticipated fear that the person may do something or act in a way that will be humiliating or embarrassing. Can you imagine that?
Sounds pretty normal to me, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, simply anticipating fear of saying or doing the wrong thing can get you classified as socially phobic and thus, you know, eligible for an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, this is clearly ludicrous. How can something like this happen in the 21st century where they would take something that many people have, you know, a certain trait, and it's probably not even a trait. I think it's a certain learned behavior or something. What do you think?
Well, what happened was there was very little oversight. There's a conflict of interest with the drug companies who sponsored a lot of the work. And the psychiatrist got, shall we say generously, a little carried away. I mean, they exaggerated and hyped minor problems until they began to look like epidemic disorders.
Yes. Well, do they feel that if they categorize it that way, it'll be easier, let's say, to treat, for lack of a better word?
Well, absolutely, and let's just be clear. One of the things that they're aiming for is to eliminate suffering, and so that they see that a very small percentage, far fewer than the people that they say, they're talking about 1 in 5 Americans having this disorder, but really a fraction of that number suffers from a truly chronic impairing anxiety to the point where they don't want to leave the house to go to work, they don't want to engage with their colleagues, and so on.
Right, right.
What happened was that the drug companies pressured the psychiatrists, and the psychiatrists, you know, working and accepting sponsorship from these companies, agreed to lower the threshold. So what you have is increasing tendency to blur the line between psychiatric problems and everyday behaviors.
So
particularly when they're including things like public speaking anxiety, they start talking about dating anxiety even, and test anxiety, which is, you know, obviously going to affect huge numbers of children and teenagers. You begin to see how the diagnostic manual begins to medicate basically almost everyone.
And you're saying that problem. Yeah, and you're saying that this is the drug companies actually affecting our medical system?
Well, what happened was, I mean, I'll give you an example with panic disorder. Obviously, beforehand, it was just simply known as panic. And Upjohn Pharmaceutical had its drug and wanted that as the licensed official medication for the treatment of panic disorder. They sponsored a conference in Boston, and the CEO got up at the head of the conference and said, there are 3 reasons I'm here. The first is money, the second is money, and the third is money. And they were that bold about it. And then what also happened was, in an effort to satisfy the drug companies and push their own work, the dissenters, a huge number of people were very angry about what was going on. They simply were ignored, and a consensus was formed by leaving out people who rejected it.
Right.
So what I was able to do in the book was simply document this process. It's absolutely fascinating. I got access to the papers at the American Psychiatric Association. This was long before email.
Right.
And so everything is on paper, all the memos, all the votes, all the disagreements, all the objections, and basically all the moves to include 112 new mental disorders, which were formally approved in 1980. And I've got to tell you, you know, they're talking now about including apathy and overuse of the internet and extreme shopping what they're calling relational disorder and parental alienation syndrome, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, sexual addiction, and binge purge eating disorder. They're talking about including all of these in the next edition of this diagnostic manual.
Right. Now, if we look at this from another perspective, wouldn't you say that shyness is really a debilitating condition where maybe, I mean, are they saying that there's actually medication to alleviate shyness?
Well, they are. I mean, what they're saying, and this is a very questionable scientific claim, is that an antidepressant like Paxil, which has been prescribed to over 18.5 million Americans just for this condition alone, Paxil, which has a very spotty track record as an antidepressant, which with lots of side effects and huge numbers of problems for people trying to come off the drug, that antidepressant should be prescribed for social anxiety. And just to answer your first question, I mean, what's happened is that there is a confusion now between shyness and social anxiety disorder because the two things basically overlap. They're inseparable.
This is TJ. I actually was prescribed Zoloft.
Uh-huh.
For really what I now realize there's no good reason. At the time, I thought I had every reason in the world. I was really just a high-strung guy with no coping mechanisms. That's all I was. Uh-huh. I used September 11th as my big panicky thing to finally, uh-huh. you know. Whatever. Anyway, I was prescribed this, and here's my take on it is that, you know, the drug companies, is it not a case where all the drug companies can lobby and lobby and lobby and they can get stuff into medical journals and doctors can offer and doctors can suggest in consultations, but ultimately isn't it, you know, it really what it is it's we can all make it an exercise in futility by simply not taking the drug. By not taking the doctors up on it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that would be one answer, of course.
Which is why a book like yours could be helpful. People read the book and listen a little bit and learn, then they realize there's more to do than just take it. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I mean, no, it's true. I mean, the book does point to many, many other ways of dealing with anxiety. Clearly, you know, we live in a stressful society. These are difficult times for very large numbers of people with the economy and with all kinds of fears of terrorism and so on. But just to give you an example about 9/11,
mm-hmm.
I mean, 1 month after 9/11, in mm-hmm. October that year,
mm-hmm.
GlaxoSmithKline, having just got approval to prescribe Paxil for generalized anxiety disorder, mm-hmm. started running dozens and dozens of ads on TV with this woman saying, "I keep fearing that something terrible is going to happen."
Wow.
They were extremely opportunistic about this. I mean, do we want to capitalize on 9/11 in order to make money? I think that's a very serious question.
Yeah. And you know, and the sad thing is that there's people out there who are looking. See, I think it. You know, what it probably is also. In my own just layman's observational opinion here. I'm a very rank and file person here. I guess part of my observation is too is, you know, it's part of our current situation is, you know, society today, we're a quick fix society. We're not ones to necessarily slow down and maybe realize that if we breathed a little bit, if we maybe not, I'll keep it, I won't get religious, but I say, you know, if somebody meditated a little bit or prayed a little bit, that can do worlds more better than any pill. And on the other hand, at the same time, that's what saved me, and that's what I tell you what, the side effects that I took Zoloft, I forget the milligrams. Mm-hmm. I was on a high dosage,
right.
And I was just a stressful guy. It was a quack, a literal quack who took $150 every 3 months from me to get the prescription.
He probably saw you for maybe 6 to 7 minutes, right?
That's exactly right. He saw me from 6 to 7 minutes.
Yeah,
they come up with a DSM diagnosis for you after asking really probably 3 or 4 questions sometimes.
Yes.
Which is, you know, how well are you sleeping? How
right.
well are you eating? Are you having problems at work?
Yes.
Are you having any sexual side effects?
Yep.
I mean, they come from those answers.
Yeah.
They say, oh, okay, this person is depressed, this person is anxious. and they have the prescription all ready to go. I mean, it's really an eye-opener when you think of the fees that they're accepting and the kickbacks from these drug companies.
Oh, it's mind-boggling.
It's very alarming.
And I tell you what, you know, and people who don't know, and I'm that's why I'm very quick, I have no shame about it because I learned, and by the grace of God, I didn't end up in... But I tell you, the side effects in terms of when I was smart enough to be stepped off the drug... I stepped off it over the course of about 3 months. I came down off it, and the lingering effects. The half life of that drug is so substantial. I was feeling the physical effects of Zoloft leaving my system a full 8-9 months later.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I want to say, I mean, Paxil has an additional factor medically, which means it's even worse when you're coming off. There are, if you look on the web, there are a huge number of support groups for patients coming off Paxil. And even when they follow the directions carefully to taper the dose and step down very carefully, some people have really acute mood swings. I mean, frightening panic attacks, obsessions with violence, fantasies about killing themselves, awful things, purely as a medical response to coming off the drug. And there is an explanation for it medically, which is that the drug has basically interfered with the part of the central nervous system in the brain responsible for adrenaline.
Yes.
And so you have, your body is struggling to produce the neurotransmitters to cope with the amount of serotonin back in the brain. I mean, it's a complicated phenomenon.
Yeah.
But basically, there is an explanation for it, and it's not getting much press. Because GlaxoSmithKline, like so many of the other drug companies, funds a lot of the research that's going on at universities, and the researchers are not, it's very difficult for them to publish negative results with the product that they're being sponsored by, and it's a case of sort of not wanting to bite the hand that feeds.
So conflict of interest again.
Many of those articles end up in just filing cabinets; they never see the light of day in medical journals.
Right, right. Finally, I wanted to ask you, Christopher, would you equate? Yeah. I mean, shyness, is that, would you say, a low self-esteem or a result of self-esteem? I mean, is it the same thing?
I don't think so. No, I think shyness is a form of introspection. I think it's a perfectly normal personality trait where people are slightly more reticent, but there are more positive ways of thinking about it. That those people are more reflective, or they may be better listeners, or they're simply not interested in being quite so extroverted and gregarious.
Right.
And our culture places so much emphasis on being, you know, what we call people persons, that those who are slightly more reticent actually are very quick to be labeled. And I find that switch, you know, you think back a generation or two, actually, shyness was something that was prized.
It
was equated with bashfulness. And, you know, I'm not saying everyone should be bashful and modest and so on, but it's just fascinating that we've done such a 180 in terms of the value that we ascribe to it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, definitely shyness, I mean, it probably has some nice aspects to it, but I think for the most part, it really keeps you from experiencing life in a way that you could.
Well,
and I think your book...
At the same time, there are so many ways of engaging with the shy and drawing people out that do not involve medication. And when you look at some of the literature, like The Shy Child, for instance, by Philip Zimbardo, that was published before all of these antidepressants hit the market, there's not a single mention of medication, and yet it's a book sort of packed with fantastic advice to draw people out, to encourage them to participate. The first premise in the book is you don't label people. You don't draw attention to shyness as a problem.
Right.
You see it as just simply one quality or a trait in a person, and I think it's important that we learn to value a wider range of behaviors than simply trying to medicate away things that we find suspicious or quirky or eccentric.
Yeah,
that's pretty troubling.
Appropriately enough, you know, we look for the quick fix today, I think that's that.
We do.
Yes.
And you know, as a result, we're medicating a lot of really young children with drugs that haven't even been formally approved for them. So we've got pediatric diagnoses for bipolar disorder and for we're giving 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds antipsychotics. That's pretty dangerous.
Yes.
The medical basis for doing that is very, very suspect.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Christopher Lane, thank you so much. This has been fascinating. I think we learned quite a bit. Yes, I've had problems with shyness when I was younger, and now I'm in radio, so go figure, you know.
So the
book is Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness, and that's by Christopher Lane. I'm looking at it on Amazon. I'm sure you can find it anywhere. Do you have a website related?
I do, www.christopherlane.org, and your listeners we'll see a lot of information about the book there, some spin-off articles, some reviews, some documents, including from GlaxoSmithKline and the American Psychiatric Association. All, I hope, kind of fascinating reading.
Yes, absolutely. And we thank you for taking the time really to reveal all this. You know, I would think if someone without research told me this, I would say this is a conspiracy theory. But I believe you did some research, so I'll take your word for it.
It could sound like a conspiracy, but it's all documented. Believe me, it all happened.
I believe you. Christopher, thank you so much. All the best, and try to stay warm in Chicago.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care. All the best.
Bye-bye. All right. That's interesting. I mean, I thought shyness is something that's really relevant. I'm seeing people suffering from this all the time.
Yeah.
And I did mention, I think it's debilitating. You know, I think...
Well, I think
it keeps you from doing a lot of things.
Well, shyness is... that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, yeah, you've got social disorders and this... I mean, look, I've got decisions that I'm going to have to be making of, you know, I'm about to become a father. And so, you know, I've got to... first of all, I don't want to... It's disappointing to me to see all these reasons, to see the drug companies doing so much collusion and stuff. Because first of all, I don't like the knee jerk reflex to indict the drug industry because they save lives. Right. There are people living with AIDS. There are people beating cancer. There are people. You know, these drug companies do unbelievable amounts of good.
Right, but I mean, when there's a conflict of interest, there, you know.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying, and therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah. Is that, you know what? It's very frustrating. I wish they would just stick to doing good. They make enough fucking money as it is.
Yes.
You know, they don't have to do all of this.
No, they don't.
You know?
They don't, but they do.
Just keep saving lives.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back right after this.
In today's army, it's about strength. Not just the strength of knowing yourself, but the strength to know when to get over yourself, girlfriend. Not just strength in the uniform, but strength in how you wear it, and if it makes your butt look good. The strength that comes from knowing when to accessorize, and the strength to know when you hear a song with a really good beat, you just gotta dance to it. If your effeminate son wants to join the fiercest fighting force in the world, don't worry. You made him gay. We'll make him army gay.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Free yourself away. Free yourself away. Get yourself away. Get away.
You don't have
Sam and Susie in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, sorry for that little hiccup there. And we have a guest in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And please introduce yourself.
Her name is Jody. Oh, sorry.
No.
Yeah, you can.
I'm just kidding.
How about you sit here and TJ will do all the talking for you.
Go ahead, Jody. Sorry, Jody.
I'm Jody Michelle Cooley, and I'm an empowerment strategist, keynote speaker, seminar leader, and coach.
Wow.
Wow.
So that's pretty. That's
and she's
a lot of stuff.
Main cook.
Probably, yes. Are you originally from L.A.?
No, I'm not.
Nobody is, huh?
You know.
Pull the microphone a little closer to you if you can.
The whole thing. Okay. Yeah. There we go.
There. So we can hear you well.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
So you're originally from LA?
No, I'm not. Actually, I grew up in, like, almost, I grew up in New Jersey.
Ooh, what part?
Texas. I was born in Denville.
Born in Denville.
We lived in Morristown, and we lived in Parsippany.
Oh, cool. Okay, yeah, I'm familiar with all that. Yeah,
everybody in L.A. is from New York, it seems.
I don't know what happened, this migration. It happens, yeah. It happens. And then the rest of our time trying to get back.
Well, you know, it's I call Los Angeles the city of Los Angeles. It's like everybody's trying to reclaim their identity is found it here in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is definitely not a place to find your identity.
I think most of the people came here with an intention to do one thing in their life, and it turned into something else.
Yeah. That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
So then you moved to Texas, you said?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I lived in New Jersey, Texas, Ohio, Florida, and no, my father was not in the Army.
You just moved around
a lot. He was an electrical engineer, and that's a very high layoff business. Yeah, so you go where the work is. We lived was Florida, Kennedy Space Center area.
Mm. Oh, okay. Oh, boy, Port Canaveral, around there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I used to do
cruise. We moved around a lot too, and it's kind of difficult as a child, right? I mean,
absolutely,
you can't plant any roots, you know, because you know you're going to move again. Mm-hmm. You lose all these friends, you leave them behind and stuff. Did you experience that?
Oh my! You know, it's funny. You know, there's two sides to it. There's one that it's really sad and it's hard as a child, but the other thing is that it's great preparation for when you become an adult and you constantly, if you're in a different situation. See, I think I'm like the eternal optimist. I call myself Jody Anna because every time we moved, I felt that it was a different opportunity to reinvent myself. Mm-hmm. So like, am I going to be popular this time? Or at least that intention. You hope you might be popular and you won't be a geek this time.
Yeah.
But So every time we moved, I kind of tried to reinvent myself. But it's very difficult. And I think that's actually how I got my sense of humor, because being funny got you friends. Or at least you didn't feel like such an outcast. It was a great barrier.
Right, and being popular is really the most important thing as a child, you know, by all means. I know that.
Humor is a tool. And it's the kind of thing that a lot of people are envious of. Because, I mean, I know because I'm so damn funny.
Yes.
And
if he does say so himself.
And, you know, but then again, I'm very quick to say it's all I got, you know. I mean, I'm very quick to say it's not like I'm funny and I can do other things. No, it's
very
all I got.
Self-deprecating.
I'm good at that too.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of self-deprecation, but being funny is and so now you have established yourself as a I know. Generally, you don't like people do what you do. Are you a life coach, an empowerment?
Wait a minute. You're jumping a little ahead here. I mean, we're trying to figure out how she got to L.A. and how she got into her business, and then we'll get into that.
Be patient. I was going to incorporate.
We got plenty of time. It's my show.
Right. Okay.
Shut up. A new show. You can do whatever the hell you want.
Right.
My show, we take it a step at a time.
I'll just sit here.
What made you finally decide to move to L.A.? Obviously, did you move on your own, or was it still with your family?
I did move on my own. Actually, I moved out here to become rich and famous. Come on, let's get honest.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's unusual.
Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah.
I got my degree in theater. I went to the Burt Reynolds Institute for Theater Training and got part of my master's
in Jupiter.
I got my my apprenticeship there at the Jupiter Theater, which is no longer there.
Yeah,
it's burnt down.
Yeah, just like his career, sadly. I love Burt Reynolds.
Burt was wonderful.
He is. Oh, did you meet him?
Yeah, Uncle Burt.
Did you meet Burt Reynolds?
He was fabulous.
He's awesome.
He is such
a great,
generous, fabulous man.
How do you know TJ? Have you met him?
No, but I love him. I love him. I have loved him. I think he is so underrated, and he's been so lampooned. And so when I say it burned down like his career, what I was I'm just sort of angry at the Hollywood, the institution that Hollywood is, and how they will just dismiss people. And I just think he's so underrated in what he's given us.
Yeah.
He is such an intelligent, smart, generous human being.
And you're
absolutely right. He was totally been dissed by
Hollywood.
And he virtually owned Hollywood for a certain period of time.
He was 5 years.
So many movies.
Number one box office attraction, hands down. When you think about the mere fact of his name in the credits was bank, and a good actor.
Yeah.
A very good actor. Again, very underrated. Very underrated.
And actually, I'm just going to, one more time for Uncle Burt, because he was really wonderful. When I first met him, I said, thank you so much for giving us this gift of your theater and being able to pay our dues. And he said, he goes, just give it back.
Really?
Wow.
And that's been my philosophy in life, that any time, when I hear something good that's happening, I pass it on.
Are you ever able to be in touch with Uncle Burt anymore? Get him for my show, please.
No,
nothing.
Okay.
Can't get him for my show.
I feel him in spirit.
I'll give you like $25.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
That's enticing. So you came to LA and you got into theater and stuff?
I did. I came out here and I worked in the business. I feel so grateful that I can say that I worked in the business. Uh-huh. I did some TV and theater and film and commercials and
and then what happened? You decided there's more to offer than
you know what? Actually, it was like the demons of my past kept coming in my way, and I realized that the reason why I picked the entertainment business, it was symbolic of my dysfunctional family growing up, and it gave me the same abuse that I got in my dysfunctional family, not feeling enough, and always coming back and trying to prove that I am worthy and I'm going to show you, and getting that validation. I really thought that, in my mind, that if I became rich and famous, I would get that appreciation and validation that I didn't get in my family.
But the way there will destroy you, I mean, if you're trying to get there.
Absolutely. And so I think just getting knocked down so many times that I went, you know what? I call it the Popeye syndrome. I've had all I can stand. So I can't stand anymore.
Come on.
And it manifested into depression. And if you've been through depression, if you've been clinically depressed, it's not pretty and it's not fun. But I'll tell you what is what depression is, and that's what I learned in the work of Louise Hay, is depression is anger we don't feel we have the right to have. And that was my kind of like my call to leave the business. And I wanted to leave, actually, because I knew so many people in the business that left that were angry and resentful. And I knew resentment is the gift that keeps on giving. I really just wanted to live in gratitude because of the gifts that what I learned in the training and also in the business side. I wanted to leave with gratitude, and so I could move on to my next phase of my life.
Right.
Oh,
interesting.
Wow.
So what did it say? I'm sorry, I have to like cough.
No, what the name of the author is? What's her name again?
Her name's Louise L. Hay.
Now, what drew you to? Were you in a situation? You said, I need to fix things. I need to address things. I need to embrace. I need to take ownership of things. Or did someone turn you on to Louise Hay, and you, having been turned on to her, said, oh, I need to embrace, which came first?
Well, the egg came first.
Well put. I vote egg. I always vote egg myself.
I had a friend of mine actually had introduced me. Said, "Oh, have you read that? This is a really good book." And what attracts most people to the book is there's this appendix in the book, and it has health conditions. And in the health conditions, it'll say the probable cause. And that's with depression. It says anger we don't feel we have the right to have.
Right.
And so after that, it's like an affirmation that says that I fully embrace my anger, and it's I can't even remember.
So it's normal to feel that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right?
I mean, wouldn't you say depression is also anger directed inward?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
When you feel helpless. I mean, you know what? And this happened to me yesterday. I'm trying to deal with the computers. And, you know, when you deal with people, you have a certain chance of influencing them or coming to terms or agreeing on something. With a machine, you can't do that. Mm. It decides it's not going to work, and that's it. And it makes me feel very helpless. Mm. And I got depressed because of it. Not clinical depression, of course, but the feeling that you're helpless, you know, and you're angry at yourself for not figuring it out.
You should have hugged the computer.
Yeah, well,
you should have hugged it.
I almost threw it out the window.
Technology is great when it works.
Yeah, exactly. Which is not very often. So you've obviously... You get into stuff like this when you had a difficult life, when you learn things and you want to pass it on to people. Mm-hmm. So at what point did you decide I'm going to get into this and become a life coach, teach other people what I've learned?
Well, because I never knew that this dark night of the soul, I like to call, I never thought that when I came out the other side, because when you're in it, you don't ever feel like you're going to come out the other side. And when I did come out to the other side, I realized what a big gift the tools that I used, and I wanted to pass it on to other people, because actually people just started to enter my life that had depression and other ailments, and it felt so wonderful to pass on the information and to go, I've been through it too, and there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. Hmm.
So it's such a great feeling to help others when they're going through their stuff.
Right, right. Hmm. So you put up a sign and decided I'm going to teach people how to live.
Actually, it's one of those things where it's the law of attraction. It's just like people started to come to me, and I was like, you know what? I think I really need to do this.
Hmm. Yeah. So what did you do? I mean, did you attend? Did you get any kind of degree? Are you a disciple of this woman? I mean,
I actually would consider myself a disciple. I really like to see her before. She's 82 years old. I'd like to meet her before. But I became a certified instructor of her work, and then I just worked with several different people in my certifications and different healing modalities and.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually consider myself the lab rat and the scientist.
Ah, well, that's okay. And now, it's more than a life coach and an empowerment expert. You talk about healing modality. You talk about healing.
Yeah. Well, actually, we can all be our own healer, and that's what I love about Louise's work is that she says, "I didn't do anything for anybody. You did it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just giving you information, and you have to take the ball and you have to run." With it.
Mm-hmm.
So in the healing is that answering so much as what's going on in your body and what can you do empowering to you? You know, is it seeing a doctor? Mm. Is it, you know, seeing a therapist or someone that's going to give you the tools to help you get through this challenge in your life?
Yes. Mm. And, we just got distracted. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry for that. But, I don't know who that was.
No, that's Sheena. She does a show here and stuff. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. Oh, I think she's supposed to come in. Maybe she was supposed to come in. Okay, well, we'll ask her to come in a few minutes. Sheena, hang in there.
So now when you say healing, for the layperson out there, for the pedestrian listener, you're not talking about. Talking about rubbing the hand and healing something like literally physically healing in the traditional sense of the word, or are you talking about healing in terms of making one's life better, going over the past and healing wounds that are left by things like abuse and
absolutely
emotional trauma.
Absolutely.
See how smart I am.
You're very good, but thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Go ahead.
So now when people come, do you find something that they have in common? Like, what's the most pressing problem for people today? What would you say?
I think...
Bunions. Bunions, most foot-related.
Where the hell did you come up with that?
Funny guy. Big brain. Go ahead. Yeah, that's a good question. What is it? Is it economy? Is it...
I think the one thing that I just come across over and over again is anger.
Anger.
And people not allowing themselves, giving themselves permission to be angry and not dealing with the anger at hand. And what it manifests in really unhealthy situations when people don't deal with their anger, like the poor person at the grocery store, the checker, you know, what do you mean it costs such and such? And they're not dealing with the fact that their husband did something that really angered them, you know, and not just in that communication.
Yeah. Right. See, now, if you were to ask me, which you didn't, and that's not your job. But my opinion is that I think there's another layer or another umbrella that anger is under. I think the big overlording thing that ails all of us to a person is, and we all live under that umbrella, is it's fear. I think fear is the ultimate driving force. I mean, this comes up almost every damn day.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
I mean, on this show, I think that we talk about it. It comes up. Fear drives us, and it can drive us to great things as well. But generally speaking, you know, I think fear is what will then it will manifest itself in anger, in lashing out, in depression, in lethargy, in any form of an ill, a dis-ease. I think all of our dis-ease comes from fear on one level or another.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. One of the F word, another F word.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, nobody likes to talk about their fears because then you'd know what their vulnerability is.
Absolutely. Right.
Now, you talk about anger, and I used to have a lot of anger, and I went through my own enlightenment or whatever spiritually. And you know what I realized? That anger is really when... your reaction when things don't go your way, you know? So once you start understanding this, you realize that, you know, I can't control everything, you know? So why am I angry? Like, for example, if someone really treats you badly or something, it may not be personal. It's just that that's the way they are. That's the way they function, you know? And just like we tend to generalize about people being born as, Sagittarius or something, right? And we think,
the Sagittarians.
Well, yeah, well,
fuck
yeah,
them.
Well, the thing is she's going to try and use this on her site. You better watch your mouth here.
F and Sagittarius and a Capricorn.
Yeah.
F the Capricorn.
Okay, well, that's not my
point. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You pushed the button, Sam.
My point is we make generalizations, and you do this because you're Sagittarius. That's what you do.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's not necessarily at you. So if you understand it that way, you realize that, you know, why am I getting angry? I can't control this person.
Right.
This is what they do. And that's just it. I can either accept it or move on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, and that's what it is, you know, when drivers cut you off, when things like that, you know, it's always because they're not doing things the way you would like them to do.
Yeah. Now, if somebody comes to you and just a general boilerplate approach you would take. If somebody came to you and said that they've got anger issues, they're currently their marriage on the rocks, they're afraid they're going to get backed up on a mortgage, et cetera, and that it's starting to manifest itself with some real bad anger or some lashing out. Of course, you're going to get specific. You're going to deal with them. You're going to talk to them. You're going to learn about them. You're going to get a book on them, I'm sure, or whatever. You're going to take it. But what would an example of an approach be from you if someone came to you for your services in dealing with, you know, just a typical situation like that, you know?
That's a lot of stuff.
You know, welcome to the jungle, sweetheart. Welcome to the jungle.
I think the core is getting a relationship with yourself.
Uh-huh.
And getting clear with yourself, and I think everything part of your life starts to work, and finding out what you are deeming acceptable and unacceptable in your life, and what is it really? What is the biggest fear you have?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you talked about fear in there, and that being the underlying of anger. It's like, what is your biggest fear? And maybe if you are having problems with your husband, what is your fear? Is your husband going to leave you?
Right.
Is that your biggest fear?
Right.
You fear that you're unlovable to anybody else. But I think it's that getting okay that no matter what happens, it's just you.
And you're going to be okay. I tell you what, when my wife and I were in marriage counseling, and I've over the past 5 years, I've had this, what has been a blessing of a roller coaster ride in my life, and my wife was sitting in the front car with me, God bless her, and we're expecting our first baby in 3 weeks.
Congratulations.
So thank you very much. So, you know, and that's all seems to be in spite of TJ, is what it is. But anyway, we were in marriage counseling, a wonderful man here in town, and One of my biggest problems, and it's funny, before you came in, we were talking about drug companies, and we were talking about, you may have heard, we were talking about Zoloft and Paxil. And one of my excuses for the Zoloft is because I would have these awful images in my head. And I thought I was all alone in this. I thought it was like me and like crazy people in sanitariums. Yeah. Would have
most people that have that become psychics. Right?
Yeah.
They think they're psychic.
So I would have these. I would conjure up an awful image of, you know, for example, my wife just rolling through an intersection and some drunk driver running the red light.
Mm.
Okay, because you know you hear that one awful story sometime in your life and you make it your own. And now I carry it with me in my pocket. And I had vivid, full Technicolor visions of this happening, and it would drive me insane, and it would freak me out. And you know, and one time our counselor asked me, a therapist, he goes, you know, what is your biggest fear? And I said something like that, and he said, I need you to say out loud that, you know, if anything was ever to happen to you, you know, what I was supposed to say was, if anything was ever to happen to you, if my worst fears are something, is if you were to die, is that you were to die, and the fact is that, you know, I would be okay.
Mm.
Now, to say that out loud, you know, to live out loud and to actually have the oxygen hit those words and live it, that's really huge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was one of my first experiences in terms of actually getting a tangible hold on what my fears are. And recently, about a year ago, my wife and I went and did a weekend with Tony Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, it was very interesting, you just talked about, is... he talked about, you know, your biggest fear and the idea of giving it as little weight, as little power as possible, taking the power out of that fear.
Right.
And literally, you know, it's something like, I'll stick to that example, something awful happens to Andrea. Mm-hmm. Now, if I was to take that fear and take it out of Technicolor, because interesting, I wasn't thinking I was going to go here, but I just said it was vivid Technicolor.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to put it in black and white, for example, if I was to then take that picture that it can occupy every corner of my brain and minimize it, literally in size, the image of a car crashing, and smaller and smaller and smaller, and literally, you know, now how awful and intimidating it is it?
Yeah.
Now, you know, now how much power does it have over me?
Yeah.
You know, and also, really, in the end, do I have any control over what happens to my wife at any given moment when she's out there in the world? I have no control. And so these are the things that your average person, not necessarily sick, not necessarily psychotic people, but that's why they can go to somebody like you. They don't necessarily need a medical doctor. They don't need drugs, psychotropic drugs.
Just the way they think, maybe,
they
right?
Absolutely. They need someone to hold a mirror up to themselves.
And your thoughts are not your reality,
right?
You know,
that
and,
too. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we have Jody Cooley in the studio. I'm going to take a very quick break because we have our hottest, latest host on the station. Her name is Sheena Middle, and she's going to come here. I wanted to help her promote the show and sit in with us. She's very fun, and you stay with us, Jody.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I'd love to.
And so we'll take a very quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Wilford Brimley for Badunkadunk Medical. If you're a woman and have a gigantic rear end, you may be safe from diabetes. A new Harvard study says women with junk in the trunk may be healthier than those without. That's because buttock and hip fat may protect women against type 2 diabetes. It's simple. Just sit on your rump and Badunkadunk Medical will send you all the food you need to plump up, and in no time, you'll have a bottom the size of a truck. Call Badunkadunk Medical today. Sure, your britches won't fit, but at least you won't have the diabetes.
You're listening to the best morning show on internet radio. It's Sam and Susie in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Sam and Susie in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
All right, then, we're back. And we've got Sheena Middle in the studio.
Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Sheena.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming in.
It's my pleasure.
We've been trying to do this for a long time, and it finally happened.
I know. You know, I work nights, so I do the show here, and then I work all night long. That's why I look like somebody pulled me through a hedge backwards.
What do you do at night after the show?
Through a hedge backwards?
Yeah, don't you think?
That's funny.
I'm a live music promoter, so I leave here, and then I go to a club, and then I promote the radio show at a club all night long.
Wow.
Oh, my
Sounds like fun
gosh.
To me.
Oh, you know, I tell you, that is one of the biggest pitfalls you can fall into in this town living here is having friends in music. And then, you know, as soon as you say yes to go and support a band, and then you find yourself myself at the Viper Rooms. Yeah, we're going at 9. 11:45, they're still setting up the drums.
Right.
You know,
that's
and it's
my fault. So when that happens to you next time, come poke me in the eye.
You're in charge of that?
I'm in charge of that for all clubs. I'm the one who decides to make people stay there and be inconvenienced.
That is such a cool, you know, it's an entirely different way of life. It's another world that literally lives on the other side of the hill that I am so not privy to.
And
not
sometimes
anymore.
On this side of the hill.
Little bit, baked potato. Got a couple of times to go to the baked potato. Yeah? Is that a place? I don't know.
Yeah, it's right here.
A friend of mine. Yeah. I do have one cool rock star friend. Cool, close personal friend, Steve Lukather and Toto. Personal friend of mine.
Really?
Close friend.
Love Toto.
Very close friend.
Yeah.
We've broken
bread.
Sheena,
you've been into music and stuff too,
right? She
knows
Led Zeppelin. She knows everybody.
Really?
I just got the one Toto guy. Go ahead.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Led Zeppelin's at my house right now waiting for me to bring McMuffins home.
Lucky.
I've been doing music for a long time. I kind of fell into it. I started out, like everybody in this town, as an actor and wanting to get into film and TV. And then I was doing a local cable show about music, and people thought the character was real. So they'd say, hey, you want to come down and MC my band? I'll give you $10. You know, and I was like 20 years old. It was like $10 for acting. I was so excited, you know.
Yeah.
And then I just started thinking, well, gosh, I should book shows, and it would be like a big theater production. And then I just kind of fell into it and wound up being in music full time. And it was through music that I got into radio.
Nice. Oh, cool. And you've been in radio for a while, right? How long have you been doing
this? This summer will be 15 years, which is odd because I'm only 16. So I started
really
there
young.
You go.
Literally,
young.
As soon as
very
I could coo, I was just doing my own show.
Yeah, she's got a couple of things to teach us for sure, TJ.
We've
only been doing this for a few months. What the hell do we know?
Right?
I
don't know.
You know what? It's a skill. If you're good at it, you're good at it from the minute you get on. It's not anything
that's
I think
true.
Anybody
and that
can
is
teach
me.
You.
That is me. That is me. I am good, and I have been good from the minute I got on. I have not had a bad show. I've not had a bad 5 minutes. I have always had something to say.
Well, that's important. Oh, you
man.
Want to.
In my show, a lull is a friggin' lull. Holy Christ. Oh my God.
On my show, a lull is, oh my God, I'm board hopping my own show for the first time.
Yeah.
Whoa, brain and fingers work at same time.
Well, so Sheena Metal, you have a show called the Sheena Metal Experience.
Right.
And that's, you're headlining pretty much our channel too. You're doing daily shows. She's doing daily shows.
Yeah.
5 to 7 every evening. And I don't know, I've been enjoying it a great deal.
Thank
you.
You
know, I think you really know what you're doing. Very entertaining radio.
Thank you.
And we're very proud to have you.
Thank you. I'm very proud to be here. It's beautiful.
That's
and
awesome.
And definitely the cleanest station I ever worked at.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
What
yeah.
do you think, Jody? Is this a good place to be at?
It's gorgeous.
Thank you very much.
Nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, you see, maybe you can get into radio too, and then we'll all be in the same boat pretty much.
My gosh.
Do you do any like public appearances, things like that? Do you do groups?
Actually, I'm going to be speaking at the Ventura County Women's Expo in March.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to be a keynote speaker there, and we're going to talk about the F word.
Oh,
feelings.
Really?
Feelings.
Cool.
Nothing. You're going to talk about feelings? Nothing more than feeling?
Nice try there.
I got really excited when she said the F word. I'm like, what kind of expo is this?
Yeah.
Sheena's ready for that, right?
It's all chicks and it's all filthy.
Yeah.
And my newsletter next month is the C word.
Oh,
commitment.
Really?
Commitment.
Ah, there you go.
Hey, she's got a lot of one-letter words.
Yeah,
there.
See, now that's the thing. By the way, that's what's about to change in my life. We're having a baby. We're having a little girl, and I really am a devotee of the C word. It's because my wife is British, and it's like it just the actual C word, and it really does tend to work for like you know describing traffic. You know what I mean? It's like I can't look at this. Traffic's a blank and a thing and a bad F.
Right.
And the thing is, like, you know, people are saying, so is your life, like, you know, how is your life going to, are you going to, like, because I curse a lot.
Uh-huh.
But it's charming cursing.
Yeah.
And I said the one thing, I said, I think the C word, I think, is going to have to be gone. Yeah. I think I'm going to have to put that in the vault.
Although if the baby's half Brit, it's got to grow up knowing how to use the ultimate British pronoun.
Yeah.
You know, it's everywhere. The Brits can find more use
they
for that
really
word.
Can.
I'm like, that's fantastic.
Then, yeah.
You just say it here, and it was like,
right?
The air sucks out of the room. Yep. As soon as you say it, then you think, no, I'm not in Ireland.
I told my husband, because I have a 4-year-old, I told him, I said he had to find a better adjective than the F word. And he's really cleaned up his act. It's amazing after. It wasn't until that she repeated it when she was 2 that he was like, she does hear me.
Funny. Yeah, they do absorb, don't they? They do absorb. What now? Is your husband in the business?
He is. He's a voice
voiceover actor.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Wow.
He gets paid to say it.
Wow. Is there anything that we'd know? Anything that we'd be familiar with? Or is it just he's just a working
just
voiceover
a working,
dude?
He used to Wamu be the voice
commercials
of Kia, right?
Things. Okay,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah,
cool.
Family Guy, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know what the origin of the F word is? Do you know what that is?
No.
Because I read it somewhere.
Well, is it
it's from England.
Is it, well, yeah.
It
of
was,
course.
It's from England, yeah. And
fornication?
For unlawful carnal knowledge.
Right.
Okay, carnal knowledge. Mm-hmm. Whatever that is, okay? I mean, to know someone, you know what that means, right?
I've heard it was fornication.
In the Bible, they use that.
Fornication under consent of the king. See, there's a few
really?
Urban things out there. Few,
so that's probably not the right one either.
No, it could be. You know, either one of them could be right.
Yeah.
But either way, you know, still just...
I love the word, man. I mean, it's just funny, you know, when you put it in the right places and stuff. And it's cool, yeah.
It's
funny
when you put it in the wrong places.
And
no, but it feels like there's the percussion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
it
you feel
adds
like
something to it. You know,
right.
You say it with emotion.
It's so much a part of our modern language. I mean, it's culturally a part of who we are.
It really is, and that's why I love that on the station we can say anything. You know, because that's the way people talk. You know, we don't say fuck or shit. You know, it's not.
But
like
you know
that.
What? And you know, what's funny though is that we do. Forget it. I was going to go in the whole direction. I don't want to go in that direction. Go ahead. Forget it. Don't worry about it.
But you know, the thing is, if you tell guests and callers they can say it, then the whole show will be nothing. Like, there'll be three words that isn't that.
Right. Exactly.
That's why I don't push it. I try to keep things edgy like I would do if we were on, you know, terrestrial radio late at night.
Right.
So it's you know, PG-13 push to the limit.
Because, you see, that's the thing, too. As a comic, it would always frustrate me when people would ask me, like, I would do cruise ships and once in a while they'd have me do it like a late night adult show, and I just don't like really. I like being dirty, but at my own pace. I don't want to. And they would say to me, you know, and I can work a room. You know, I could tell that the room was not really an F word room, and just you know, we could talk about adult stuff, but they don't need fucking. And you know, and so they would actually ask me, can you maybe dirty it up a little bit, you know? And I'm like, I just no. So the thing is, though, is that on my show, at the same time, I will curse 8,000 times more off air than I will on air, because I don't want it to be. It needs to count. It needs to just gratuitous. And the funny thing is that you know, since Stern has been on Sirius, he actually gets email from people saying you're cursing too much, because it's just something you don't need to bang it out of the park every single time. So even Howard is getting chided by his own fans.
I personally don't think he uses it too much, but you know, whatever.
Well,
they made it a point from the beginning not to overuse it and stuff.
Right.
But you see, I know what you're saying, Sheena, because your show, you might want to syndicate it. You might want to play it in different platforms.
Right.
So you want to keep it clean, you know, and that's your format. You have to decide on the format in advance, you know. And I decided on this particular show, we're going to say anything, you know, and we do. You know, and you know, but thankfully Susie's not here, so
if I get started, then TJ will never let me near his baby. My problem was always when I would get places and they would be like, you know, this has to be totally G-rated comedy, and I thought, well, yeah, I'm just gonna sit in the corner and hum to myself. As a comic, I don't know how to do. I mean, I know how to censor the language, but I don't really know how to censor them. I'm just a filthy comic. It's just naturally what I do.
See, and again, for me, it's like it really, as I got older and more experienced in comedy, I tended to just take more liberties, and also because you just develop more finesse as time goes by as well, and so you tend to curse more, and it works if you do it with finesse, you know. Like I've said a million times, that whole Michael Richards debacle at the Laugh Factory,
right?
You know, it's like there was a couple of factors. A, he's not a comic. He's a sketch actor. He's a brilliant actor and wonderful. Not a comedian.
Not a stand-up.
Yeah. And B, what he said was not funny. If he had said, and again, you know what? It's his thing. I can't stand when I say, if he says the N-word, I can't stand saying the N-word. I can't, I feel like I'm such a slave to society. Saying that word, but if he had said it like 18 times, but it had been funny, we probably would have heard about it, but it wouldn't have been this awful upper. And the third thing is, too, is that they started it. They heckled. Yeah. That's the thing, too, is ultimately they crossed the line. They're the ones who effed with his show.
Right.
And it's a, but anyway, really, it is a prime example. He was not funny.
I'm surprised they let it go that far, because I did shows at the Laugh Factory for like 5 years. Yeah. And, you know, I had my own nights and I emceed. Mm-hmm. And I love hecklers, because to me, the fun is when they start heckling you and then you just go after
you
them.
You kill them.
And they don't know what to do. And the audience loves that.
Yeah.
But at the time I was there, which was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the policy was when the heckling started, security came and pulled him out.
Wow.
And I hated that. Because to me, that's a sign that you're not a good comic. Like, you're saying, look, if anybody gives me a hard time, come and pull them out, because I can't handle it. Yeah. And I didn't want people to think I couldn't handle it.
Well, that's because,
I'd make them eat their own face and then cry and Hannibal Lecter those people.
See, people don't understand it, too, is that, you know, there's talkers and there's hecklers.
Right.
People just talking during a show, you want to kick them in the face, because they don't know what the frig, they don't even realize what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're just selfish.
Very distracting.
Sitting there and talking and talking and talking. You know, and a heckler, though, it's like, you know, they just, they if you're good at it, then you just destroy them. I'll take a heckler over a talker any day, you know, and just like Sheena said, it's just wonderful to rip them apart and stuff.
Oh,
and,
it's like a whole new thing of material that just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like God just put an idiot right in front of you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fantastic. It's like fighting a hot fudge sundae in the street. It's a prize
with a
universe.
With a clean spoon.
Ah! Yeah. The holy heckler is put in front of me, because they're always such idiots. They have like one thing, you suck, you're fat, you're not funny. I mean, they think they're comics, but if they had, you know, if they had any talent, they'd put themselves on YouTube.
Right.
So they're the worst comics ever.
And isn't it the bitch of all bitches when they come up to you after the show and they say, hi, did I help you out or what? I was giving you stuff.
Love
I was helping
you.
I was helping your
like
skin.
Crap. Yeah.
I love that. Mm-hmm. So now, Joe, do you get heckled at these empowerment seminars?
Right? When
you have no power.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't know about feelings,
you don't know
bitch.
About feeling. Skinny bitch.
Oh, man. I imagine
to this.
With your little figure. Miss Cutie Patootie.
Is that what happens? Angry fat women heckle
get in,
you?
Get in touch with my feelings. No, wait. What happens?
She's in serious stuff.
No, people don't really heckle, but people,
but
they're pessimists.
There's pessimists, yeah. and now, but will you? How
That's
will you?
Life's hecklers.
Actually, you know, public speaking is public speaking. Now you're sitting there at a banquet, you're sitting there at a seminar, or something like that. What do you get irritated? Will you get distracted? You know, how would you handle if you had a chronic talker? Now, show business, you know, a nightclub, we can go after him and say, shut the fuck up and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
You're up there with a Prada suit and a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to
care?
Right,
you care
exactly.
That's the worst. I don't care if you leave the club.
Exactly.
Screw you.
Yeah, F off. Do you take your laser pointer and go, hey.
You see, Johnny, you're in the wrong business.
Sincerely, have you ever had a situation at a...
I hope never to have a situation. You just kind of have to zoom. I really haven't had a situation like that. But, you know who your people are, you know, and you just have to keep reminding yourself that you know at least 5 people are really resonating on what you say.
Yeah.
Everybody else in the room could be off in Wonderland in their head. They may be there because they were forced to be there, or they're there because they really want, most of the people really want to be there because they want to do invoke change in their life, going, okay, what does this lady have to say? Is there something I can apply to my life here? And I think that I offer something, you know, that, especially when you talk about feelings and the F word, that people go, okay, that's something, okay, I relate to. So I think a lot of times it's people can relate to what I have to
and
say.
And again, when's the this next expo that you'll be
at? It's March 17th at the Ventura County Women's Expo.
Oh, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
So,
that's just some of those women bring beer.
I just rang a bell. I just said, oh, St. Patrick's Day.
So where is it exactly? Is it in...
at the Ventura County Fairgrounds.
Right. And where is it at? In Ventura or Oxnard?
It's Oxnard.
Oxnard, right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
Strawberries and
so
Mexicans.
It's about an hour drive, but it's nice driving up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see all the strawberry fields
and
everything. Yeah. Let's not go
there.
Somebody's
got to pick them. Okay. What? That's what they do.
We got to respect our guests here.
Are you Mexican?
We go on a tangent.
Are you Mexican?
No, I'm Irish.
There you go. They're all over it.
I'm Irish. That's white Mexican.
You DJ is Irish too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I saw your clad eye.
There you go. Yeah. Now, Buenos dias.
Sheena, yesterday I overheard something on your show. I was listening off and on, but there was something about sex toys and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Are you involved with those?
I am involved with those.
Okay. Can we hear more about
it? I have a long-term
committed
relationship with sex toys, and I would like to talk about my feelings.
So it's more than just using them, though, right? I mean,
I'm actually endorsed by them.
Really?
Yeah, I have an endorsement with Girl Toys. It's an all girl sex toys line that Topco Sales makes, and you know Topco is like the people that brought us the Scorpion and the blow up doll. As a matter of fact, I have a not Sarah Palin blow up doll. Just for personal use. No, actually, that I use when I'm on stage with my band. I put her out there, and you know, we all have a little fun with her.
Cool. Oh my God, that's funny.
And they're fantastic because you know, sex toys are expensive. I mean, yes. You know, you do women's expos. That's a part.
She's
of it.
Like, you know, you masturbate all the time.
That's how a lot of women get in touch with their feelings.
That's right.
And they're nice enough to donate, you know, 20 bags full of stuff. At every show that we do, so we do like the first 20 people that come get, you know, a free bag of porn toys. And Girl Toys is fantastic. They make us a banner, and they've been really an amazing endorser. So
really?
I love that.
Give them a plug. What's the website?
It's if you go to MySpace and type in Girl Toys, that's their individual like interactive thing. And then also if you go to topcosales.us and click on Girl Toys, and they also have a forum where you can, you know, they're trying to get me to blog now, where they want me to like try things out and talk about it. Uh-huh. And even for me, that's a little edgy, and should I do that? No, I think I might. I like to try new things I never thought I would do. I thought, I can blog about sex toys.
Did you know that Hello Kitty has a vibrator?
Really?
Yeah.
A 5-year-old Asian girl.
Yeah, for little girls.
I was at a bridal shower, and it's like pen, you know. And I was at a bridal shower, and someone gave that as a gift, and I was like, "Where did you get that?" And they wouldn't tell me, and I found it online. Mm-hmm. And I happened to be in Hawaii at a Hello Kitty store, and there's all these Asian women working there. And I said, "Yeah, do you happen to have the Hello Kitty?" It was like I had talked blasphemy.
Really?
They're like, "That is a massager." And it's only found in Japan. I was like,
"Oh, that's funny. That is a massager. And it's only found in Japan."
Nothing only found in Japan is just a massager.
That is so. You know, even to this. First of all, that is so goddamn funny. That story is really gold. That is so friggin' funny. And I remember to this day. I mean, seeing like in was it that like the what was that Lily in the Lillian Vernon catalog, that like mail order thing, like. I remember, like, yeah, my mother would get it, and I just looked at it. I remember seeing this, like, an oblong in the Lillian Vernon calendar.
Right.
An oblong, and a woman was holding it on her hand like that. And it was phallic.
When your hand aches.
Yes.
And I'm like, a lot of times the top of my hand just gets so worn
right.
out.
And so I need a penis-shaped object.
Yeah. a phallic vibrator.
Oh,
and that would
top
definitely
of my hand
it.
Hurts today. I mean, whoa.
Doesn't that blow your mind, though, that it would be next to gardening gloves and, you know, whatever.
Well, look, I mean, the sex industry figured a way to get this into mainstream, and that's what they're doing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, who uses a massager for a back massage?
Right.
For crying out loud, you know. It might feel good, but I don't think most people do.
Well, the problem is by the time you've held the thing, it weighs like 50 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah,
you hold it up and around to your back, and then you have a whole new set of problems from holding it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas
you pull
it's much
a muscle,
more convenient
right.
to hold it in the front. Yeah. And it does have things that spin, and it says right on it, for massage only. And I'm thinking, well, that's kind of a massage.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
something like I need to mow the lawn.
Amazing, some of the things that women will stick up there, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But what are you going to do? You know, I'm sure gay men stick a lot of things in there too.
Yeah. So and get them stuck. That's what the ER's for.
Yeah. Oh my God.
You ever been to the ER at 4 a.m? That's all that's there.
I'm sure. I mean, can you imagine some of the things they see there at the ER?
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
My God, people do the craziest things.
Yeah.
You really do gerbils and stuff, you know? I mean,
yeah.
TJ, come on.
Especially gay Mexicans in Oxnard. Strawberry.
Salsa gerbils.
I thought it was a chihuahua.
Yeah.
It's a big rat. It's stuck a big rat.
So, Jody, what are these $1 million bills that you brought us here?
Setting out intentions for 2009 for you guys.
Really?
Positive,
$1 million.
Positive visualization.
I have it on the ceiling of my bedroom.
Oh, really?
One of these or an actual? I've heard of that.
That'll inspire some feelings.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
I prefer a mirror on the ceiling, but, you know, whatever gets you off.
These are fun. Yeah.
Actually, did you hear the story of the woman, I think it was last year at Christmas time, like in Oklahoma, passed off one of the $1 million bills. And the woman actually tried to change it.
Really? Give a change?
For real. In Oklahoma. Well, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Figures, right?
There you go.
The woman was arrested. They passed off the $1 million.
Yeah, I'm supposed to even arresting somebody for this. It's like you just kick them in the air.
Well, arresting for stupidity. You know?
With a big boot. That's what you do. You sentence them to a boot in the ass.
They should have arrested the stupid person that thought that they had $1 million in change in their drawer. Well, let me see. Whenever they open that drawer, there's only $3.20s and quarters.
I'm going to need the key.
Yeah, exactly.
Manager, check out four.
I'm going to need an approval on it. Instead of rubbing the pen on it and
exactly,
just, you know,
exactly.
Well.
Sheena, what kind of topics do you talk about on your show and stuff? Do you cover pretty much everything?
Yeah, I like the human sideshow known as life.
Uh-huh.
And so I like, politics light, relationships light, and anything that's just bizarre and freakish.
What I liked is you brought in a psychic and you really put her on the spot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is, that's excellent radio. You know, and that's the thing, you know, about radio is, you can respect your guests, obviously, without hurting them or anything, but you can question what they do, you know. And I know that Susie and myself have talked about this, and we think that all the psychic is just one bunch of bullshit, you know.
Right.
It's like TJ had a little vision. It's just, you know, and yeah, I'm a psychic, Sam. I'm a psychic because I had a vision, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, for crying out loud, we all do, you know. We all get these flashes and images in our head. It doesn't make you a psychic. So I like that. I like that, Joe.
I just think, I'm a believer. As we pointed out earlier, I'm Irish, so I've always got one foot in the netherworld and was raised to believe all of that. And my mother is very psychic, so I'm not a disbeliever. But I also think that just because you buy a tarot deck, you know what I mean?
Right. How did you take this person to task? What did you do?
I just bring up all the things that people say are hooey about the psychic business, and that I don't believe just because some people... Look, I think we're all a little psychic.
Uh-huh.
We all have the ability to run. Can I run a marathon? No, I can run 2 steps and I pass out on the sidewalk. Just because we all have the potential doesn't mean we're all good enough at it to make a living and to counsel other people.
Right.
Some people are, and the psychic I had on is very, very good. Or because I wouldn't have had a bad psychic on and put him to the wall, because that wouldn't have been any fun.
Right.
But, not everybody is a psychic just because... And it's so funny because, like I said on my show, so many musicians that I know now have become psychics.
Really?
Like, I'm not really playing shows right now because I've become, you know, a psychic meditative healer.
Yeah, it's
and
like
it's
the latest
thing. The new thing,
you know?
To make money.
Yeah.
And it's sad because when people do want to go to somebody who's good, or the police need to go to somebody who's good, how do you know who to go to? Because now half of Los Angeles is sitting around with stars and moons painted on their toenails wearing a turban.
Yeah.
Which one do you pick from? It's the new singer-songwriter. Like, you know, in the 80s, everybody was a singer-songwriter.
Right.
In the 90s, everybody was a filmmaker. Uh-huh. And this decade, everybody's a psychic because you don't have to invest in a guitar. Right. You don't have to get investors for a movie.
You don't have to go to school or anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I don't understand this, you know. And one thing that bothers me about psychics is... Okay, so let's say you can predict something. Okay, fine. But they act as though they're like therapists. Like they're certified therapists. They'll tell you what you should do in a certain situation.
Right.
Like, your husband might be cheating and stuff. And so this is what you should do, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're not qualified for that.
Right. And my psychic that I had on is a very good friend of mine. Because as I said, I wouldn't have had some weirdo on and then pressed him against the wall. Because he might have put an evil hex on me. Yeah. That's not good.
Always got to kick him.
That's part of the thing, is that people call her all the time and say, you know, I have a pain in my side, is it my kidney? And she always says, like, I'm not a doctor, I don't. But there are psychics that are like, well, for $300 I could. It's funny because I used to have a partner on the air, and at one point had a psychic and paid, you know, $300-$400 a session, which is, you know, you should be good for that, and played me the tape recording of the session once, and it was basically just all this woman talking and the psychic saying, well, I see that, I understand, that's upsetting. I mean, it was literally like
therapy.
She was just purgy, and then give me $400, because a lot of people just want to hear their own voice. No, that's what I want to hear. Which is actually why a lot of people are in therapy. They just want to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know. So I feel they're in a certain way robbing you from, you know, if you want someone to really give you a good word or something, they're telling you what you want to hear, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, and when they try to prove that they're good psychics, like I'm thinking of something with an M or a T. Does that seem familiar to you? It's like, you know, if you're a psychic, give me the whole friggin' name. You know, why do you have only the initials?
Well, you know, we have Pamela Beatty who's on right. Channel 2.
We have a few psychics.
A spirited debate. There's also Justine Kenzer, a psychic yeah. girl. They're pretty damn good. Yeah. And Pamela will actually go. She's an empathic intuitive mm-hmm. is what she is, another hyphen it in that realm. And but she will actually like she was talking to me about something. She was connecting the dots between this bad stomach that I have and stress and my inner child and pain and all that. And anyway, she was talking about how, you know, somebody recently said something that really wounded me, and that was the source of this recent upheaval in my stomach, etc. And she gave me, she said, were you with a group of people? You weren't. It was a group of people, and mm-hmm. I said, "Oh my god!" And then she got as specific as to describe the woman, what the woman looked like, and where in the room she was in relation to me, etc., etc., etc. Nailed it like holy God in heaven, unbelievable.
Really?
And so, yeah, I mean, no, Pamela Beatty is the shit.
The real thing, really.
Oh, and Justine. On the money, ridiculous, yeah. on the money. They're awesome. Mm. And, you know, and then again, you can go to the Armenian on the corner
right.
and, you know, whatever. That amazes me, by the way. That amazes me is that the zoning, you can just, in a residential area, you can throw neon stars on your thing yeah. and say, come in.
Like the house yeah, right around do. Here. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The crazy psychic lady house. It's right around in this
yeah.
general vicinity. And it's like every couple months she adds something else.
Yeah.
Like there's a, you know, there's a weird, like, you know, Madame Lazatsu on the, uh-huh. you know, uh-huh. put your quarter in, like in big on the lawn. And
yeah,
then
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then there's
yeah.
chairs all over the lawn for the people can wait while they're waiting for their readings. Yeah. And then I keep thinking, what are the neighbors think it is?
Yeah,
because I get a notice if my rose bush has too many roses.
Exactly.
Your bush is too big.
Exactly.
When you hear your bush is too big
yeah.
you get nervous.
Yeah.
Especially in Los Angeles.
Great. Then on that note,
this is not the Midwest.
Bushes. Okay, we want
Jody,
to
where
Jody.
Can people find you?
Yes.
Website.
My website is Jody, J-O-D-I, Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, mm-hmm. Cooley, COOLEY.com.
Okay. Wonderful. Okay. We'll put a link on our website okay. so people can find it. They don't have to remember.
Jody, Michelle,
Cooley.com. And your next workshop, whatever you call it, is in March?
My next keynote speaking is in March at Ventura County Women's Expo. It's supposed to be fabulous. All sorts of different speakers there and opportunities for women.
Okay.
And if you look at my website, you can find how to contact me and the different workshops that I give.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Well, all the best to you. You've been a great guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel like I should be paying you.
Yeah. No, you're already good.
A $1 million.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
That's great.
And you earned it.
Yeah, thank you.
Sheena, go ahead and plug your show.
We're on LA Talk Radio, Channel 2, every day, Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. And my website is SheenaMetal.com. That's my personal site. And then this week we're launching SheenaMetalExperience.com, which is the name of the show.
Really? Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. Well, I love the show. You should definitely listen. Yeah. And that's it for today, right? It's
fantastic.
The weekend.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, so we'll see you all here on Monday.
Dr. Michelle's coming in. I'm after that. I'm on at noon. You sons of bitches, listen.
You have been listening to Sam and Susie in the Morning, which airs every weekday at 9 a.m. Pacific. To contact the show, please email your question or comment to sam@latalkradio.com or susie@latalkradio.com. A complete list of all past shows can be found on our archives page and on iTunes. For sponsorship or advertising information, email us at info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Susie in the Morning is a presentation of LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com. LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.